No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm your host, Jess Root. On the line with me is Seth Cox, and we are here with show 118 on a Tuesday night, recording. Looking back, we're kind of done talking about the NFL draft. Maybe talk a little bit about some of the things that we're hearing around the internet and all the things that come with that. But this is the show about the undrafted ones, along with a couple other things. We've got some news that coming out of Arizona Cardinals headquarters of there will be a new member of the Ring of Honor. That hasn't been formally announced, but it has been reported. We're going to talk about some interesting comments made by a former Cardinal. And then we're going to look at sort of the class of undrafted rookies the Cardinals have had. So first off, welcome, Seth. Unbeknownst to those of you who are listening, this happens to be take two because of a technical blunder on my fault. So welcome back again to the show, Seth. How are you doing tonight?
Good, Jess. How are you doing?
Well, keeping up busy. Everything. This is the busy time of year for, well, as you and I, as family men, as we round up the end of the school year and all sorts of fun stuff and the NFL draft. So everything is good over here. I'm talking Arizona Cardinals football, talking draft. Seth, who runs and is one of the hosts for the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast, they're starting up their post-draft stuff, which is, you know, it's going to be for, you know, I started jumping onto the show to listen to some draft evaluations, and this is going to be a really fun part if you continue listening to the show, is they go with a series of why your scouting sucks, and Justin and Seth are going to jump right in and look back at their own evaluations. Seth, what's on tap for the show coming up over the next couple of 3 weeks?
This week we start with our own evaluations. We're going to look heavily into the 2013 draft, and Justin and I both have big boards for that draft. So we're going to go through the top 30. There's no reason to go into, you know, too much more, and kind of talk about why we sucked and what we missed and how we've grown and learned from those mistakes. Something that I think too often evaluators, especially in the NFL draft community, you know, don't want to take back and look at. They instead just want to look at, you know, what they've done well. So for me, I think it's important to go back and look at why you made mistakes, what you missed, and then how you can get better. And we'll start that this week. We have guests lined up throughout the month or throughout the summer. We're going to do 9 shows, maybe 8. But you know, we have some really good guests lined up right now, and you know, we're looking forward to it, and looking forward to really going back and digging into that 2013 draft season and to look at what we said then versus what the reality is, and you know, for us to take an overview of what we missed and why we missed it.
And so that he's got the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. He also helps me out on RevengeTheBirds.com, especially when it comes to the draft stuff, player evaluation. He's my guy. I lean on for evaluations because me, I have little less into that, little less skilled at that. But I do. The site that I run is RevengeTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. Most of you listen to the show probably are familiar with it. You're already members of the site. If not, head on over, SB Nation's RevengeOfTheBirds.com, where you will find the greatest community of Arizona Cardinals fans and hopefully enough content to keep your appetites, you know, satisfied. As even with the offseason, we are pumping out content out of as much as we can, 4, 5, 6, 7 articles sometimes a day, keeping up with everything that there is. Before we get started, so we basically got 3 main things we're going to talk about in the Ring of Honor. The Arizona Cardinals will be announcing it coming up. By the time you listen to this, it will be probably already reported. Kent Summers is reporting what it will happen. The Cardinals send out a press release saying they're going to have a press conference Wednesday at 4 p.m. with President Michael Bidwill and former Cardinals player, outstanding player, Roy Green. And Kent Summers reporting that he will be added to the Ring of Honor, something that I think anybody in the media who got that press release thought. When I first got the email, that smells like Ring of Honor, which it appears it's going to be. So we're going to talk a little bit about the addition of Roy Green to the Ring of Honor. For some of you younger Cardinals fans, you won't have any idea who he is other than a voice that you start to hear now on some of the Cardinals broadcasts and their podcasts and things of that nature. We have a former Cardinal disgruntled a bit by the role and how things ended for him, something we haven't heard too much of. And then we're going to talk about the class of undrafted rookies. The Cardinals added 16 undrafted rookie free agents, and then had a couple of tryout players in rookie camp who made the offseason squad. So we'll talk about what we know about them, some of the intriguing battles that we might see, because some of these undrafteds, as it has every year, seem to make the roster. And this year, it seems like a lock that at least one will most certainly do it. And then there's a couple of intriguing things. So let's go ahead and get started. Let's talk about the Ring of Honor. It seems like it almost feels to me now the Cardinals are trying to do a Ring of Honor member per year. Does that feel that way to you, Seth?
Yeah, and you know, it's odd that it took this long, right, for Roy Green to get in. Or maybe I'm just unaware of his personal situation. But that just seemed odd to me that it's just now happening, because he's even been with the organization, I think, for, 2-3 years? So
in some capacity, yes. But you've noticed it over the last several months. He's becoming more active with the organization. He's part of the analysis team, the broadcast, the podcast, however they're doing that. And now actually has a – does he have a – no, he doesn't have quite – but that's another player. That's Frank Sanders, who has a show with Kwame Lassiter here locally. But, yeah, now I'm old enough that I actually remember Roy Green as I first started following the Cardinals. And it's unfortunate. Anybody who became a Cardinals fan after they came to Arizona, guess what? You missed out on a really special player. As you'll see over the next few days coming out, he was a two-way player, started as a defensive back, kick returner. And this was back in 79. So he played with, you know, Jim Hart. He played with Neil Lomax and, you know, was originally played two-way, started defensive back, practiced, head over, and showed his coach, realized he might be the best receiver he got, played him at receiver, and the rest is history. He was a two-time Pro Bowler, two-time All-Pro, one season had 14 touchdowns, another 12. A season with over 1,500 yards receiving in the 80s when passing numbers were not nearly so prolific. I mean, they still had some with some big numbers, but nothing like we see today. And when he came to the Cardinals, when the Cardinals came to Arizona, so he becomes the first Ring of Honor member to play for both St. Louis and the Arizona/Phoenix Cardinals, because they were still the Phoenix Cardinals way back when. And he was something else. He was a shell of himself. He was, by the time that the Cardinals came to Arizona, he was 31 years old. So he played three more seasons. He caught that first year with Neil Lomax in 88, 68 catches for over almost 1,100 yards. Then that dipped to 44, over 753 and almost 800. But by that point, they were doing a mess of quarterbacks. He averaged, you know, he also had some carries. He had some kick returners, I believe. Well, when he retired, he had pretty much every receiving record on the books. That no longer is the case since, Anquan Boldin, Larry Fitzgerald. But it seems like the Cardinals are finally starting over the last 4 or 5 years to honor previous and current players. I don't know what it was before, but it seems like every year now they're adding to the Ring of Honor, which is finally something good.
Yeah, I just, it's one of those interesting things to me about why it took so long. I think I could get behind the idea that it took so long because of, let's say, they weren't looking to add you know, St. Louis Cardinals, that it was more about the Arizona Cardinals. I know that kind of ignores team history and you don't want to do that, but I could get behind that. But now all of a sudden, you know, you're seeing it more and more. And so I guess better late than never, right? Like that's what matters. But I always wonder why, you know, that's just me.
And well, it's good to see they've gotten some of the contemporaries. So they got Kurt Warner in, they got Adrian Wilson in, but now they get Roy Green. There are some definite guys who they need to get. Neil Lomax deserves to be in there for the numbers he put up. Heck, Jim Hart. And you look at Jackie Smith, Hall of Famer. Apparently, his time in Arizona, in St. Louis, at least, did not end well, at least with the Bidwell family. I don't know much about that. And he's more famous for the catch that he didn't have when he was in Dallas. But there, I mean, then you go to the Arizona, the Phoenix and Arizona side, there's Larry Centers that probably deserves to be in. And then after that, because there's such a history of not good, it's kind of hard to point out. But I for one, welcome this. And I'm really enjoying seeing former Cardinal big time players becoming more and more active in the organization. As we know, Adrian Wilson is now officially a scout. One of the guys that was instrumental in having the Cardinals draft Marquis Christian. So I, for one, welcome this and hope to see more of those guys like Neil Lomax, you know, Otis Anderson, the team's all time leading rusher, is not in the Ring of Honor. They're two of their best quarterbacks in history. That's stuff that you got to fix.
Yeah, it is. And it's odd that it's taken so long, but I guess as long as they are, you know, as long as they are bringing them in, I guess it doesn't matter in the end. I guess my biggest thing is like, let's not wait too long for some of these guys, because unfortunately, NFL players tend to live long. Yeah, they don't tend to make it as long as you'd like to see them. So, you know, let's not. If you're going to honor these guys, let's get them honored. And I understand the one a year type thing, but yeah.
Now, question: I'm trying to think. You're much younger than I am, so you don't remember those days. What time did you start paying attention to the Cardinals?
I was probably 5 or 6, so 91, 92.
Okay, so that was right very, very, very at the end. I have some memories of Roy Green because I picked up, you know, the Nintendo game Tecmo Super Bowl. He was on there. He was really the best offensive player that they had, the most consistent receiver that you could throw the ball to back when they had Tim Rosenbaugh as their quarterback. Yes, I remember that game. I still have that game, in fact. And the guys on like the 1989, 1990 squad are immortalized for me. The players in the NFL 1989, 1990 are immortalized to me because they were all on that game. Yes, I'm that old.
That's okay, though. That's what makes it fun.
So, great. So we got the Ring of Honor. So that's kind of on the high note, on a much, you know, kind of a lower and kind of a, you know, head-scratching note. The second thing that we come across over the last little bit is Lamar Woodley. Lamar Woodley. He apparently is not a fan of James Betcher, as he came out on his podcast. I didn't know he had a podcast until last week when the news came out. And he was on and apparently has some sour grapes, as he apparently wants to continue his career. And frankly, we all probably thought that he was lucky to get a job with the Cardinals as he signed a veterans minimum deal. Now he really hasn't performed, put up any numbers since about 2010. 2014 ended in injury, played just a few snaps, played a decent amount in the first half of the season for the Cardinals, and had a pec injury that landed him on injured reserve. So two straight seasons where he's on injured reserve. And here is kind of the thing. So he said he wasn't used right. He wasn't a fit. And this is what he said, a quote: "In Oakland, we had a dumb defensive coordinator. And in Arizona, we had a dumb defensive coordinator. It was just two dumb guys that felt like they never played football, but felt like they knew more about football. They thought they were like Madden, that we were like Madden players. They draw something up and on paper look good, but the players would still have to go out there and run it. And then this is, and those guys didn't really listen to their players. They had they was a one-track mind. Whatever they seen, they wanted us to do it, and that was the problem. I wasn't a good fit out there. Basically, you know, he talked about being moved to defensive end in Oakland, and then when he came to Arizona in the 3-4, the outside linebackers weren't used the same way. My reaction? You knew what you were getting into when you went to Oakland. They were a 4-3. You weren't going to play strong side or weak side linebacker with the type of player he was. Came to Arizona, it's a 3-4. Maybe he had a different thought of what he was going to do. But at his age and his lack of movement and speed, basically what he was good for was for base defense where he could set the edge. And he really didn't get a – in his one sack, he basically just walked into because I can't remember who it was, just kind of fell down. When he was there.
Fell down, and you know, I texted some buddies about this, and the conversation was, you know, what do we make of this? Is this sour grapes on Woodley's part, or is this like a okay, so like maybe need to worry about it type thing going you know ahead, and I think because he failed in two spots. And then called out the failures of both, you can look at it more as sour grapes than if it was like, oh, yeah, you know, unfortunately, things just didn't work out in Oakland, you know, and then when I got to Arizona, I had a bad, you know, a bad defensive coordinator that didn't always do it. So, you know, I think the fact that it sounds like he, you know, compared it. Both, you know, were comparative. I think you look at it as just sour grapes as, you know, more than anything else. That's the way I would look at it. You know, I'm not going to be like other people that do things on Arizona radio and tell him he's dumb and lazy and, you know, all that stuff. But I think it's a combination of a guy who fit one system well in Pittsburgh and, couldn't adapt to other systems and, you know, wants to have something left in the tank that he just probably doesn't in reality. And that's unfortunate for him. You know, it's hard to let go, especially when that's all you've done the last, you know, I mean, 12 years is putting it mildly when you just, or 15 years when you just look at it from the college and high school perspective. But, you know, a lot of them it's been since they were 8, 9, 10, this is, you know, this is what they've done. And this is, been how they identify themselves. So when it's almost over, they tend to lash out.
Yeah, well, and production-wise, we could see this, you know, when they signed him. That was a flyer at best. Going back to 2011, he had 9 sacks. In 2012, 2013, and 2014, and 2015, so the 4 seasons following that, he combined to have 10 sacks. You know, I really wish he wouldn't have said that. Now, as to the comments about Madden, now, obviously there was a level of lack of respect from Woodley as a longtime NFL player to play under a guy like James Betcher, who apparently really hasn't played football, was a first-time coordinator, and hadn't, you know, been a coordinator at any other level. But at the same time, Bruce Arians trusted him, and Bruce Arians is a old school guy. And the comment about the Madden thing, I'll say one thing. In some ways, Betcher is a little Madden-like, but in one case, where else would you get the idea that Daylon Buchanan could play linebacker? I mean, that was a very Madden-like thing. You take speed and you put him in the box, but the thing is, that worked. And he's the best linebacker they had.
Yeah, and, you know, like for me, the whole thing comes down to, I think we saw Betcher exposed at times during the year, especially when you saw things like when they were playing, you know, really good teams who had the ability to win in multiple ways.
The best offensive coordinators, Todd Haley exposed him. Who was the other guy that I'm trying to think who was the other offensive one? North Turner exposed him a little bit. But yeah. Those are two of the top play callers in the NFL.
And so, you know, you do worry about maybe his, what's the word I'm looking for? ability to make, you know, on the fly adjustments type thing, but I wouldn't go as far as what he's, you know, trying to insinuate in his lashing out.
Well, and then he blames Betcher for the loss in Carolina. He said, in Arizona, we had one of the best defenses. You look at that defense stacked up all the way around. You look at the results that happened in the Carolina game, 49-15. It wasn't because we had bad players. No, our defensive coordinator, he just didn't have the common sense to talk to his player and make adjustments because he wanted to do things his way. When he did things his way, those are the results we got, bottom line. So what he's saying is it was the defensive fault and made it sound like that it was because he wouldn't make adjustments or talk to his players. But when he did things his way, that's the result that we got. Okay, but what about the rest of the season? Did he not do things his way the rest of the year when they had one of the top defenses in all of football? And the fact of the matter is, coaching or not, I mean, he was on his A game. There wasn't a single defensive player that looked good. Patrick Peterson, they all looked bad. They just looked bad.
They looked bad, and you kind of look at it and, like, I'm going back right now because I want to see. I think that, you know, again, there's a point to be made that he was probably overmatched. I know a lot of people want to, you know, all of a sudden now people are okay with blaming Carson Palmer for the loss. So, because, you know, we can't say anything bad about James Betcher, so let's pile on Carson Palmer. But I found that funny. Sorry, that was funny to me. But, like, you know, you go back and look, they weren't prepared. They didn't play well, and what are you going to do? I mean, you look at it, drive one was a field goal, drive two was a touchdown, drive three was a touchdown. The total amount of time that it took to score those touchdowns were just under, you know, 9 minutes for three drives. Not you know, one drive, not two drives, three drives, 9 minutes, still the first quarter and you're down 17-0. So, yeah, I mean, you want to blame the offense. Guess how many turnovers happened on those three, you know, touchdown or three scoring drives for Carolina? I'll give you a hint, zero. So, that, you know, there's a point that there's accuracy there, and then maybe at the beginning of the game, and that maybe he was overwhelmed, but he wasn't the only one. I mean, let's be honest. Like
everybody, except for David Johnson and Dave and JJ Nelson.
You know,
they didn't know how big the moment was. It was like they weren't ready to play football on a big stage.
But even then, you kind of look at it, and I'm talking about like the first quarter. They had the Cardinals had less than 100 yards total offense, like in the first quarter. You know, they just nobody was ready to play. Like it wasn't a good start to the game, the offense or the defense. The thing is that when the, you know, spiral down continued, it was obvious that there was nothing the defense was going to be able to do because the offense would continue to put them in bad positions. So, you know, to put it on Betcher, I think is lazy and uneducated, but to, you know, kind of absolve him from any wrongdoing is also trying to create a convenient narrative that's not accurate either. You know, they were down 17-0 without any turnovers. So, you know, what was happening on those three drives type thing. But like I said, it's sour grapes. I mean, and, you know, the worst thing that can happen is that in 2 years, this is accurate and Betcher's fired and, you know, the Cardinals and the fans are all like, well, maybe we should apologize to Lamar Woodley, but guess what? Nobody's going to remember that by then. No. So it's sour grapes to me.
If we also heard some complaints from Gerard Powers or Rashad Johnson, or even some grumblings, you know, when Calais Campbell ends up leaving, yes, we're just not going to hear it because Betcher apparently knows what he's doing. He proved that. Is he the best defensive quarter in the league? I doubt it. He definitely ran into some adjustment problems against North Turner and against Charles Haley. But again, those are two of the best offensive minds in football. So that's enough of the Marlon Woodley, because truthfully, there's the league has had enough of Lamar Woodley too. It's once you hit the 30s and you can't finish two consecutive seasons with injury and you don't produce anything in those times, guess what? You're probably done. It's different than Dwight Freeney, who produced. Lamar Woodley's career is over. So I hope he saved his money, and I hope he gets lots of hits on his podcast so he can, you know, make some money that way.
And he made $46 million, so I don't feel bad for him.
No. Better have kept some of that money. So, you know, moving on to rookie camp. The Cardinals had rookie camp this last weekend, and a couple of interesting storylines to play out. One is Robert Kendiche is dominant. In fact, he he looked great. He kind of blew up linemen, and then there was the comment where his motor was running too hot, apparently, for walkthroughs. He was bent pressing linemen. He was killing people out there. And Arians had to threaten him with getting docked pay if he got fined because of not, you know, he was basically being too rough. And my reaction is awesome. That's the Kendiche we need to see. But at the same time, none of us should be surprised because he's one of the most physically talented players to come out of the draft, and he's going up against guys who, for the most part, will not be playing football anymore for a career.
No, and you just have to hope that they, that this is a focus and determination that hasn't been seen from Kendiche yet. And maybe he's a little embarrassed. I mean, he still got drafted in the first round, but you know, if we're gonna lament Teddy Bridgewater falling in the draft because he got picked at 32 and not, you know, 8 like people wanted or whatever, then I guess we can lament Robert Kendiche falling to 29 and say that, you know, this could be a good driving force for the first, you know, his first 3, 4, 5 seasons in Arizona, and you know, that could be a good thing. That could be the chip on his shoulder that he needs moving forward.
And I was going back in the past couple of days. I've been going back to NFL Combine, to some of the press conferences they had, to see where they fit now. There's one thing I can notice from Kendiche is when he spoke with the media back then, he recognized some of the immaturity that he had on the field when it comes to dealing with adversity. And so there were times he didn't produce or he didn't, you know, play as hard as he should on some plays. He recognized that, but he said with the off the field things, like, I'm going to prove to whatever team takes me, they're going to be rewarded. He was immature, and it looks like he's getting it together. And on top of that, and the part I really like is, he's not going to play the amount of snaps this year that he did when he was at Ole Miss. It's not going to happen. So the lulls in the game that he's not going to have nearly the fatigue issues or the focus, because he's not going to be on the field nearly as often, because the Cardinals have a good defensive line rotation.
Yeah, and that's, you know, one of the things that you and I have talked about even off the air with our love for Kendiche is that he's going to come into a good situation where he doesn't have to be an every down player and be, you know, two gapping consistently from the 3 technique and the Cardinals 3-4 like Frosty Rucker does. You know, he can come in certain situations and you're going to get a pass rushing unit of, you know, Rodney Gunter, Robert Kendiche, Calais Campbell, Chandler Jones, and then, you know, they can bring Marcus Golden in, they can bring Alex Okafor in, they can blitz every once in a while. Like, all of a sudden, you have really talented and diverse bodies along that front four to rush, and you can go a lot of different ways. You know, you can take, I know this is, you know, heresy, but you can take Calais out at times and put Gunter and Kimdiche in the middle and let Jones and Golden come off the ends together. So it's just things like this that make, you know, that will make him better and make the pick look silly for the NFL. But in reality, the fit was just so good. You know, I said Denver, Seattle would have been similar type of fits. And so I think he got to one of the, you know, three teams that right away would allow him to be the dominant personality on the field that he can be.
Another couple of things that we noticed that came out of rookie camp was, well, for one, they got to see a first look at Jake Coker. But draft pick Harlan Miller, the guy who was slow, apparently, had himself a couple of interceptions. Even Bruce Arians, you know, the guy that loves to find 4-3, 4-4 guys, he found himself – we found him making excuses for Harlan's, you know, for Miller's lack of speed, saying he plays fast and, you know, that he probably is faster than what his 40 time is because he didn't train for this and that. But, you know, and Harlan Miller kind of is the sexy dark horse pick that people like. Pro Football Focus likes him. Todd McShay, he's his favorite pick up for the Cardinals in their draft. And, you know, I don't know if he has what he has in terms of a future present for 2016, but at least there's some potential there.
Right. And that's what you want in these draft picks. And that's the whole, you know, portion that it's odd for Cardinals fans because we've never dealt with it, right? Like, we've never dealt with expectations of you don't need these rookies to be impactful players. And so as fans, we don't, you know, it's one of those silly memes or memes from the internet, you know, like, what do I do with my hands? Like, I'm so excited, you know, like, and that's what the reality is. It's like, what do I do with the rookies? Because I don't need them. Like, they're not necessary for this team to be good. And I think to half the fans, it's causing a misunderstanding of talent evaluation and things like that. You know, it's going to be a mispick if whether they play from day one or if they have to wait a year and then play. Like, it's really not going to make that much of a difference. So the player itself isn't going to change that much. It's just whether or not they're going to be good enough to deal with the rigors of the NFL. And so, I don't know. I mean, it's such a unique and new experience for Cardinals fans that I get the idea.
So, you know, I like, now, outside of that, there wasn't a lot of rookie camp stuff because there wasn't as much of a buzz. Jake Coker's an interesting story.
There's not that many good rookies here. Let's be completely honest. Okay. Like, there's not that many spots, and there's not that many names that are interesting.
But if we look in next on Revenge of the Birds Radio, we're going to talk about, actually jump into the undrafteds. They signed 16 undrafted rookie free agents after the draft, and then they added another two. Well, they let go of one, added another two, who were tryout players. And so coming up next on Revenge of the Birds, we're going to talk about the undrafted. So the undrafted ones. Back on Revenge of the Birds, so we got the class of 16 undrafted rookies. And here, you know, some of these I don't know very much about. A couple of them, I'll just lean on feeds. They signed originally Arizona running back Jared Baker, you know, 5'8", 200 pounds. Not the combine. He's since been cut after rookie camp. They had Appalachian State receiver Bobo Beathard. He's got bloodlines. They had Calgary cornerback. It's listed as Eli Buka. His actual name is Ellie. He's Ellie Buka. Then a long snapper, Cameron Kennedy, out of Portland State. Notre Dame receiver Amir Carlisle. Alabama quarterback Jake Coker. Eastern Washington tackle Clay DeBoard. Another long snapper out of Campbell, Daniel Dillon. Notre Dame safety Matthias Farley. Southwest Oklahoma State's cornerback Trevon Hartfield. Duquesne receiver Chris King. LSU, you know, Kevin Minter's buddy Lamar Lewis. Nebraska tackles Givens Prince. Fresno State punter Garrett Swanson, Monmouth tight end Hakeem Valles, and Western Michigan cornerback Ron Zamort. And they added Elijah Penny, running back, after the tryout, and also receiver Chris Hubert. Any of those names that you were – I believe you knew a little bit about Clay DeBoard. Obviously, we knew about a little bit Jake Coker. But any of these other players had you heard of before?
Yeah, I know both of the Notre Dame players just because my wife and her family are Notre Dame fans. So I'm forced to watch Notre Dame football every week. You know, I don't know if either one of them make this team. I don't know if any wide receiver is really going to make this team, to be completely honest with you. If they would have drafted one, maybe. But when you look at it, Amir Carlisle, you know, he's a guy that I think he was a transfer, if I remember right. I don't know, though. I had a look.
He started at USC.
That's right. I knew that. And so he –
I'm cheating. I've got the bios in front of me, so it's not, I didn't know on the top of my head.
You know, he's a guy that – he's a slot receiver, and he's not a big slot receiver, so I'm not sure what he's going to do in Arizona. He's also – 24, like, I know he's not 24 yet, but he's going to be 24. So that's always one of those tough ones to project is what they can do. I'm trying to remember if he returned kicks. He did.
He had 61 receptions for Notre Dame. He carried the ball 60 times and he returned some kicks. So he kind of was one of those guys, I guess, you know, kind of like a DJ Foster, Arizona State, a poor man's Percy Harvin, I guess, if you're trying to pick a role.
And that makes sense. And he's a guy, you know, that you don't, you know, that could stick around because if he does a good job returning kicks or, you know, punts or anything like that, take Patrick Peterson out of that role. Maybe J.J. Nelson's out of the role because they're wanting a little more from him. So things of that nature. Matthias Farley, I mean, he's a camp body to me. I don't see him doing much. Maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I hope all these guys prove me wrong, to be completely honest. So I wouldn't, you know, learn too much about him personally. I know I'm there.
Jake Coker, a guy who, you know, he's been on a couple of winning teams. He backed up Jameis Winston when Florida State won. Then he transferred to Alabama and ended up winning the championship there. So basically he's a guy who was a backup who had to wait his turn, but then put together, you know, not stellar, but solid final season and got himself a championship. He's got the size profile, 6'5", 232. How about the arm? What would you say about his arm strength? Does he fit Arians?
He does. He has a nice arm. He throws the ball well downfield. I've seen some people say that, you know, that's not his strong suit. It's not his strong suit, but he does a good job with it. I mean, when you look at a guy like Coker, you're looking at a guy that's, you know, the biggest thing to me is, What is he mentally? Because he, and I hate to say this, because these are all good guys, and you know they all work hard, and obviously, in the end, he made the right move. But I mean, he ran away from competition at Florida State, and then he didn't win the competition at Alabama. I mean, he lost out to Blake Sims, who, let's not, you know, mince words. He was an undrafted free agent out of college, so it's not like he lost out to a guy that's a special player at quarterback. The issues with Coker are, you know, processing speed, delivery speed, everything's got to be turned up to 11 with him in terms of how fast he moves and what he does. You know, deep passing, he's not bad at all. He didn't go downfield a lot in the Alabama offense. He was 20 for 47, 9 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. I think, yeah, they had two drops. I don't really care about that, though. Like, where is the ball catchable? Well, there's a lot of things that go into that. So,
well, you know, how good do you have to be to hand the ball to Derrick Henry?
Yeah, exactly. And so that's the other thing. The thing that worries me about Coker is that he's kind of average with when he's got to, you know, work with pressure. And that's a concern, because one of the things that people don't get about the Arians offense, or maybe they are getting it now, is that you're always going to be under pressure, because he likes to run deep routes, deep passing routes, and, you know, throw the ball down the field. And so you're going to have to work in pressure. And if you're, you know, middle of the road in college against pressure, what does that mean you're going to be in the NFL? That's my biggest question with Coker. From a mental standpoint, you know, he's going to be a guy that wins people over on the chalkboard. I think physically he's got a higher upside than Matt Barkley. I don't know if mentally there's a big difference, but the thing is that Barkley's never backed down from a competition. So that's what's going to be interesting to watch going forward from here. I wouldn't be shocked if Coker beat out Barkley, but I don't think it's going to happen either.
So we've got some other guys on here. Clay DeBoard, if I recall, you had mentioned him in our pre-draft as one of the late-round tackle prospects. Is that correct, or did I just hear that from somewhere else?
Tight end, you mean, right?
Oh, was he a tight end?
Wait, I'm trying to – oh, no, tackle.
He's an Eastern Washington tackle.
Yes, yes. I don't know if I talked about him, but I remember bringing up the name. You know – He's the athletic type now. Like he's the new age tackle that moves really, really well. The question with him is going to be, what, you know, can he kind of add strength to his frame? He's very he kind of reminds me of Nate Potter in that way. Like he's very long and lean in what he does, and so he's not a thick guy. So I don't know if he's going to be able to beat out, especially with all the investments they have on the offensive line. But he is the type of intriguing practice squad guy to me. Like he's the type of guy that hangs around all camp and then ends up on the practice squad, because he does have, like I said, the athletic ability. He's got good measurables, as you know, all that stuff that you can't teach, but he's thin, and you wonder if he can add weight, and you know, if he can bulk up and get strong enough for the NFL.
He's a guy when his name came up when VP of Player Personnel Terry McDonough was on the Big Red Rage, and they were real high on him. Then there's a couple of guys on this list, and I'm trying to think, is there any one of these other guys that stands out? Obviously none of these guys are guys I had known. You know, it was good to see an LSU guy. So I'm sure Lamar Lewis is probably, especially with his build, 5'11", 232. He's probably, would you say, a Kevin Minter clone in terms of what his skill set is?
Yeah. I don't think he's that good though. Like he's not as talented. Chris King from Duquesne's an interesting one. I know that a lot of people liked him coming out. I'm not sure, again, if a wide receiver can make this roster. He had a pretty okay pro day. He ran right about a 4.5. So he's interesting. He'll be an interesting one to watch, because he has really good hands, like really good hands. So. You know, 4.55, that's what he ran out. Sorry, I wanted to double check before I kept going. But yeah, he ran a 4.55. He's not like, obviously he's not super fast, and so you wonder if he could be kind of a big slot receiver for Arizona moving forward. Again, just another name to kind of remember. I want to say Hakeem Valles is a name I know, but maybe I don't. I have to look. I'm searching through my phone on all my notes that I have on people. So just give me a second.
What I know about him, he's 6'5", 260. He was a 2-year starter at Monmouth. He was a receiver. And so he started as a receiver, so obviously he got bigger. So he's now 6'5", 260, which is the body size that Bruce Arians likes for his tight ends. It would appear he was a team captain – His younger brother is a linebacker for the Bills. He caught 40 passes.
He's a good blocker. That's what it was. Okay. Sorry. I found it. So he's a good blocker. And he works really, really hard at the regional combine. So yeah, that's what it was. At the regional combine, he ran a 4.63 at his size. So his combination of size, speed, and being willing and pretty able. He's an inline blocker right now. I found my notes. He's an inline blocker right now that will kind of, you know, do a good job with the guy head up. He's still learning to hit people on the second level and, you know, people in space, which is, you know, as we saw with Jonathan Cooper, that's a hard, you know, talent to learn. So I think he's another intriguing guy. Again, I don't know if any of these guys can make this roster because, again, we're talking about a talented group of players in Arizona. But I do think that these are interesting names to know for potential practice squad guys that, you know, are in a year in 2017, guys that are fighting to make roster spots with all the potential roster turnover.
A guy that if we're looking at this year's Jackson Shipley, because the Cardinals do have a very deep receiving core. They've got the guys on the roster, plus they've got Jackson Shipley, who they really liked last year, and they stashed him on the practice squad. So he'll be battling for can he beat out a Jerron Brown or can he beat out a Britton Golden this year? A guy that you look at. I don't have Bobo Beathard, Jeff Beathard, that goes by Bobo at Appalachian State. He's 5'10", 190, so he's kind of like your classic little guy, you know, the Danny Amendolas and the Wes Welker and all those guys. But he's very versatile. He comes from an NFL bloodline. His grandpa played in the NFL. His grandpa was also general manager. His grandpa was a general manager for the Redskins, the Chargers. His dad is a scout for the Panthers. And he was a scrappy guy because he was his dad, Jeff Beathard, he was Mr. Irrelevant back in like 1988. But he's got a mix of speed and, you know, versatility that, you know, might be this year's Jackson Shipley. Other than that, there's a to at least John Gamadoro on Gambo Nash mentioned three names to watch for. And basically, for what we're seeing as we go forward into the offseason, you have OTAs and training camp and mini camps. Basically, there's two main things. Obviously, the addition of Jake Coker, because we haven't literally seen nothing out of Matt Barkley, because he was added as a trade right before the season. Then he's more famous for his outfits for competition each week than for anything we've seen him do. So it'll make the fourth quarter of the preseason moderately interesting because we get to see, well, what does Coker offer? What does Barkley offer? The one that there's going to be, I guarantee you there'll be probably at least one undrafted guy that makes the roster, and that's because they need a long snapper and they signed two. Not that there's much to watch there other than them snap the ball. So you've got Cameron Canaday and you've got also the other guy, Daniel Dillon. John Gambo said that Dillon is the guy to watch on the long snapper. He says that Clay DeBoard is one of the guys to look for as a potential guy to watch. He's the guys they really like. And then he mentioned Trevon Hartfield, the cornerback out of Southwest Oklahoma State. You know, looking at his bio, he's obviously – so it's not – Oklahoma, it's not Oklahoma State. It's a directional school, Southwestern Oklahoma State. But, you know, he was a really ball. He was a ball hawk. He defended 25 passes. He had five picks in 2015. He also had 73 tackles. He also played at Southern Nazarene University. He was an all-league kick returner. So he's a guy that Gambo says, I don't know anything about him other than the bio that's on there. But then there's one other guy that is really intriguing, and he's getting some buzz around our message boards, our threads, and that would be Eli Buka out of Calgary. And I believe we're going to get him on the show over the next few weeks. You know, his reps are doing very agent things and communicating and getting his name out there to people like us who talk about the Cardinals. This guy has measurables off the charts. 6'1", 205. He's played receiver. He's played corner. He 4.3 speed. He missed last season with an Achilles. He's 90% back, according to his agent, and is already doing exercise with the 60-inch boxes, which for me seems absurd because the 60-inch box is just to climb up and sit on for me. But that's a name. If there's any names to pay attention to, I think it would be a mix of Coker, the long snappers, maybe DeBoard, because there is there is really kind of a spot open for a backup tackle. And then, maybe Eli Buka, maybe one of those corners. I mean, the cornerback position is a spot where there are spots to be taken.
Yeah, and, Buka was a guy that I didn't bring up because I knew we were going to specifically talk about him. And so he's a guy that Emory Hunt messaged me as soon as the Cardinals signed him and said, you're really going to like him. Like you said, 6'1", 211, 24 reps on the bench. and this was known before the draft that that the Cardinals liked him, apparently. There were three.
There's a lot of buzz. The Cardinals love this guy.
Yeah. So the interesting thing, the question is he a guy that can get back to his form that was a, amazing athlete and playmaker before his Achilles injury? And that's the main question that we have moving forward with Ellie is, how dominant was he in Calgary? Not overly, but he was a great athlete. And so that's, you can coach that. I mean, heck, you saw that the Cardinals will take that in the third round if they see something special over that. And so we'll see what happens there moving forward. But I do like him. Emory thinks he can play any position in the defensive backfield if he's back to his full health. So that's going to be, something interesting and fun to watch because he is so athletically gifted. But he's also, like you said, a big dude, 6'1", 211, and strong at, 24 reps on the bench.
Yeah, so fast, strong, great movement, apparently, from what I've heard from people who know more than me. The only thing that's kind of is the downside is the coaching staff's not going to be able to see much from him because in OTAs he's probably still not going to be cleared. He said he's 90% there, but that means over the next offseason, this offseason stuff, he's not going to be on the field. I envision he will. Yeah, if we look at a guy, obviously they're different positions. Last year when they brought in Zach Wagaman, the pass rusher was out of Montana State, I think, or Montana or whatever. And super productive, and then right before the draft, he broke his foot. They brought him along slowly. He finally got some work in training camp that hurt his foot again. Put him on injured reserve. They stashed him there all year, and he's back. He's still under contract. So kind of I see perhaps that Buka has an outside chance to be this year's Wagaman, especially if he isn't completely back. Or at worst, a practice squad guy, especially when you've got the crop of defensive backs that they just added with Marquis Christian and Harlan Miller and Brandon Williams. In addition, they've got Justin Bethel, and they're still likely going to add a veteran of some sort. So, that's a name to watch. So I've got maybe Bubba Beathard's a guy to pay attention to. Maybe the long snappers are, as exciting as a long snapping battle can be. Obviously, I think one of those guys is going to make the team. Jake Coker and Matt Barkley will be an interesting battle. A name on there that I know nothing about in terms of statistics, but do you think that Drew Butler is any real danger of losing his job to Garrett Swanson? They bring in a punter. So that tells you Chandler Catanzaro's safe. They're not bringing in competition for him. to bring the competition for Butler. I think you're on mute, Seth, if you're saying anything.
Damn it. Drink. No. You know, that's the one thing that we've seen from the Cardinals is when they do have a question, that they're willing to bring in a guy to push. And we're seeing that with Butler. You know, they tend to make guys prove that they deserve a spot, as opposed to just saying, oh, you've improved, so let's see, you know, so you've earned this spot. And you look at Butler, and much to the chagrin of even our show, he did get better last year. So, you know, but like, it wasn't to the point where you're going to say, oh yeah, you're locked in as our punter moving forward. Let's do this. And so I think bringing in help or bringing in, you know, potential challenge for him is the right move and the best way to push him going forward.
Well, interesting fact about Swanson that could be beneficial. Say he's at least Butler's equal. He also was the kickoff guy for Fresno State. Chandler Catanzaro, all through college, did not do kickoffs because of the, you know, the guy with a rocket launcher on his leg who's the punter. What was his name? Out in San Francisco now. But, you know, Chandler Catanzaro, pretty good kicker. Good leg on kickoffs. But if you can get a guy, a punter, who can just kick the ball out of the back of the end zone, in addition to be a pretty good punter, that adds some little bit of versatility as well.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, I mean, it's a punter battle, right? Like, between this and the long
stuff. Yeah. That's actually, you know, honestly, this is so super fun.
You know, the funny thing is, I actually have watched the Portland State long snapper, because I think it was last year, but it might have been this year, they had a punter that was really good. So I just watched him because somebody told me he had some insane punts, and I flipped on something, a video that they sent me, and he did. And I, you know, you don't really notice the long snapper because he doesn't, unless he screws up. So I think the reality is, yeah, I've seen him long snap, and he did fine because I didn't notice that he sucked. So,
well, and at least you did long snapping in high school, so you at least understand the position.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, I couldn't give you any insight. Yeah, he snapped the ball. He didn't screw it up.
Exactly. So, but no, I mean, there are some things you want to look at, and especially, you know, his ability to release off the line and after holding this block and get downfield in a you know, in an aggressive manner, and those are the things that you'll want to see. And so, unfortunately, you know, we have no way of knowing that because we're not going to be able to see that.
Probably not. So those are the undrafted guys. You know, for you guys hardcore Cardinals fans that are still listening to the show, fantastic work, because, you know, most of these guys are guys we're not going to hear much of. You will hear, and what I'm actually interested in finding out, and this information will come out in the weeks to come, is who got the signing bonuses? Because I believe teams have, what is it, $93,000 that they can use to sign their undrafted. That's the total that they can pay in signing bonuses. And last year, you got a feel, and those were the guys that also had some buzz about them. Alani Fua got one of the biggest ones. Rob Crisp, Jackson Shipley. Those were the guys they paid almost all of their signing bonus money to, is those three. And those were the guys who had buzz even as early as OTAs. It'll be interesting to see if that happens. I'm sure probably the long snappers got some of that because, you know, they needed long snappers. I'm willing to bet that Clay DeBoard is one of those guys that got a little bit of money, and maybe Buka as well. But I'm interested to see, because that's one way you can see the priority those players were.
Yeah, to see how much money that they were given and to see how much money you know, the Cardinals were willing to invest in them beforehand. Yeah, usually those numbers start to leak out, but they haven't yet. So,
And so, you know, that brings us to an end of another show. And I'm not quite sure what we're going to do over the next little, because the OTA start up. I mean, there's not a whole lot unless there's some big news. The one thing I'm going to try to line up over the next couple of weeks, it might be a couple of weeks, is, you know, the day job, which is at school, is wrapping up. So sometime soon, I'll line up an interview with Eli Buca because, you know, his agent all but invited me to do so. And so I will gladly bring him on, although I am a little bit worried about, you know, I'm 0-for-1 on undrafted guests who make the team, as Valerian Umezioki already was cut before even rookie camp started. So that was a bummer for me. So we'll have Ellie on at some point, and Seth and I will, we don't have anything planned over the next little bit. I'm sure something will come up as news comes up, but that'll wrap up this show of Runs to the Birds Radio. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Make sure you sign up on iTunes if you have that, so you can find us on iTunes, on Blog Talk Radio, on Stitcher Radio, on Google Play, and of course at RevengeOfTheBirds.com. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Have a great night.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting RevengeOfTheBirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.